J.P. Morgan, a name that still commands reverence in financial circles a century after his death. While today's billionaires make headlines, Morgan wielded power that modern tycoons can only imagine. At his peak, he controlled assets equivalent to 7% of America's GDP and personally rescued the U.S. economy twice. His influence was so profound that when the Federal Reserve was created, it essentially institutionalized the stabilizing function Morgan himself had provided. With his unmistakable purple nose and penetrating gaze, this complex man, financial genius, devout Episcopalian, art collector, and ruthless dealmaker, reshaped America's economic landscape with fierce determination, leaving a legacy that continues to influence global finance today. Born into privilege in 1837, Morgan had advantages many self-made titans lacked. His father, Junius, already a successful banker, provided Pierpont with wealth and connections. His education across Hartford, Boston, Switzerland, and Germany gave him fluency in French and German, enabling him to navigate both European and American financial circles. Life presented challenges, too. Rheumatic fever at 15 left him with a permanent limp, while severe migraines often confined him to bed. During these painful episodes, he developed his habit of playing solitaire, a practice that became his signature during moments of intense concentration throughout his career. Morgan distinguished himself through his visionary understanding that America needed financial innovation beyond simple deposit and loan models. While his father remained conservative, Pierpont pushed boundaries, creating revolutionary methods for American finance. This tension between tradition and innovation drove Morgan to establish himself not merely as his father's heir, but as a transformative force in his own right. Behind Morgan's imposing facade lay profound personal struggles. None affected him more than losing his first wife, Amelia Mimi Sturgis. When she was diagnosed with tuberculosis, Morgan insisted on marriage and took her to North Africa, hoping the climate might restore her health. She died just 4 months later. His second marriage to Frances Fanny Tracy provided 4 children, but lacked his first relationship's passion. The couple gradually grew apart, Morgan immersed in work, while Fanny preferred simplicity. Their relationship became one of mutual respect rather than deep affection. Morgan's most visible struggle was his disfigured nose from severe acne rosacea, which left it abnormally large and purple. This insecurity led him to insist all photographs be retouched. His nose would glow brighter when angry, making his emotions literally visible. Beyond banking, Morgan was a genuine art connoisseur, amassing one of history's most significant private collections, worth approximately $1.1 billion today. The sea provided his greatest solace through his yachts named Corsair, offering relief from recurring depression. He was also a devout Episcopalian who believed literally in every word of the Bible, creating an interesting tension with his business practices. The churchman who locked bankers in his library until they signed agreements exemplifies the fascinating contradictions that made Morgan such a complex figure. Morgan's ascent accelerated in 1879 when William Vanderbilt asked him to sell 250,000 shares of New York Central Railroad without disrupting market prices. Morgan executed this flawlessly, requesting a directorship on the railroad's board instead of a standard commission, understanding that influence often proved more valuable than immediate financial gain. With this foothold secured, Morgan launched a $40 million bond issuance for Northern Pacific Railroad while financing Thomas Edison's electric innovations. He installed 400 bulbs in his home and backed Edison Electricity Company, creating Manhattan's first power station. This venture threatened Rockefeller's oil lamp business and represented Morgan backing the industrial future. His most famous achievement came in 1901 when he orchestrated the creation of United States Steel Corporation, purchasing Carnegie Steel for $480 million, about $14.2 billion today. The resulting corporation became America's first billion-dollar company, producing 67% of the nation's steel. Morgan's approach to business consolidation became known as Morganization, reorganizing companies to eliminate wasteful competition and create more efficient operations. While profitable, this work was extraordinarily demanding, causing some partners to literally work themselves to death. Morgan's most extraordinary contributions came during national crises. In 1893, when U.S. government gold reserves plummeted, Morgan approached President Cleveland with a solution. During their meeting, news arrived that only $9 million remained in Federal Reserves, with a $10 million draft pending that threatened immediate financial collapse. Morgan proposed that his firm and the Rothschilds purchase gold in exchange for government bonds. The president agreed, and the bonds sold out in minutes, stabilizing both gold reserves and the dollar. Critics called this profiteering, but Morgan had prevented catastrophic collapse. During the Panic of 1907, with no Federal Reserve yet existing, Morgan focused on restoring confidence and injecting capital. After allowing the unsalvageable Knickerbocker Trust to fail, he assembled $3 million to rescue the Sound Trust Company of America. In a dramatic move, Morgan locked trust presidents in his library until they committed $25 million to save weaker institutions. At 4:45 the next morning, he handed Edward King a gold pen saying, "Here's the place, King, and here's the pen." All signed. Morgan's action stabilized the system within 2 weeks. Senator Nelson Aldrich later acknowledged, "We may not always have Pierpont Morgan with us to meet a banking crisis," a recognition that led directly to the Federal Reserve's creation in 1913. Morgan's unprecedented power inevitably attracted government scrutiny. Theodore Roosevelt's election marked a turning point in business-government relations. In 1902, Roosevelt's Justice Department filed an antitrust lawsuit against Morgan's Northern Securities Company, forcing its dissolution. Morgan viewed this interference as an attack on progress rather than protection of competition. These investigations took a personal toll. By 1907, the aging banker had partially retired, suffering from worsening migraines, digestive problems, insomnia, and depression. During his final journey in 1913, Morgan contracted a fever in Egypt that worsened in Rome. His condition deteriorated to constant delirium, with his last words being, "I've got to go up the hill." He died shortly before his 76th birthday. Despite controlling assets worth over $100 billion in today's money, Morgan died with a personal fortune worth less than $30 billion by modern standards. The immeasurable stress he endured likely contributed to his 20-cigar daily habit and various health problems. J.P. Morgan transformed American finance through vision and will. As America evolved from agrarian to industrial, Morgan created financial innovations that powered economic growth throughout the 20th century. Today's J.P. Morgan Chase differs from Morgan's creation, yet his influence endures in American capitalism structure, in corporate organization, financial markets, and government-private finance interactions. We live in a world shaped by this complex, brilliant man whose determination helped create modern capitalism. His story shows how powerful individuals are shaped by personal struggles and build institutions that outlast them. In our era of financial complexity and technological disruption, we might ask, who are today's J.P. Morgans reshaping our economic landscape? Will their legacies prove as enduring as the banker who twice saved America from financial ruin through personality and conviction alone?